Well, hello there, my friends. Chris Marcus here with you for Arcadia Economics on Tuesday, February 3rd. And as I know you're well aware, we had a massive historic crash in the gold and silver prices on Friday. Silver down 30%, although that has created as some consequences, which we will dig into today because it seems like in the midst of what my guest today, Stefan Gleason of Money Metals, had previously described in an interview we did about a week ago, that we were already reaching beyond COVID levels, if I have that correct. And then things got even more chaotic on Friday. A lot happening on the retail level. So, Stefan, great to have you in here. And before I give you finish your introduction, also really a pleasure to meet you in person at the Silver Institute dinner a couple months ago already. It was back when silver was in the 60s or one of those ancient prices. So welcome on in. Lots to talk about. And how are you today?
Hey, it was great to meet you finally in person. Obviously, we've been talking for years, and that was really cool. That was a great event there in New York, and yeah, that was eons ago. It was $60 up and $30 down ago, basically in silver. But yeah, exciting times in our market, as you said. I mean, last week we were already seeing levels that were frenetic and higher than we'd ever seen, and then Friday was just just off the charts, just absolute pandemonium with that crazy drop. When people, it's kind of scary if you look at that chart. But it's interesting, it's kind of scary until you think about, like, 3 weeks earlier it was at that price, they came back down to. So we need to be patient and keep our expectations in check, but it's a volatile ride, and it's probably going to get even more volatile as we go along here.
That's pretty much what I have forecast. If someone asked me, well, what do you think the price of silver is going to be in the next 1 to 3 months? I don't know, somewhere between 40 and 200. Although certainly I think you can expect more volatility. I think that's safe to say. Here's a look at the long-term chart, which doesn't have the spike to 120 in there, although interesting when you see that, how do you respond? Because normally, if you take the name off and look at any chart like that, you might think a pullback could be coming, of which we certainly saw one. Yet, as you were describing, perhaps you could talk a little bit more about the people who came in and were buying. I would guess that it was largely existing gold and silver stackers, but were there new people? What could you share about
Well, I mean, honestly, the volatility really prompts people on all sides to take action. You have longtime holders that are selling, especially as we led up to that run up that we got up to 120 last Thursday. A lot of longtime holders were taking profits, not selling their position, not selling out, but taking some profits. And there's nothing wrong with that, of course. That's, nobody ever went broke taking a profit. That's a great thing to keep in mind. So that we've had a lot of longtime holders selling, and then also some adding to their positions. But really, the story, I think, of the last 45 days, 30 days, has been the new people coming in and coming in ways, that are unsustainable, impossible for the industry to absorb, because it's a very small industry. I mean, honestly, 1 to 2% of the American people own any gold or silver other than jewelry. Maybe they have an ETF share or mining stock in their account, but physical gold and silver is not something that is widely held, especially in larger amounts. And that's a lot of potential growth. So when you go from 2% to 4%, or 3%, or 5%, I mean, these are 50, 100% increases, unsustainable across the supply chain, across the dealer network, across the minting and wholesale network. And I mean, we've really started to see that acceleration of new blood coming in since probably mid-December. And I think that that's only going to continue. I think we're seeing that, on the correction, people that were watching the headlines, seeing that run up, suddenly saw, massive pullback and jumped in. And it was just complete pandemonium on Friday. And through the weekend, it was very, very busy. I mean, honestly, we are focusing on, we're not necessarily focusing on prospecting right now, just because there's so much volume already that we just need to make sure we can handle the volume we have, serve our customers well, especially our longtime existing customers, make sure that we're on top of the fulfillment backlogs and the different, customer service issues that come up when you have this kind of volume, just processing all the inquiries and responding to people and all that stuff and hiring. So it's really intense, really intense. I mean, there's definitely a lot more out there, a lot of people coming in, and we're still seeing that this week.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. I saw your one of your articles where you mentioned I think you've hired 50 people in the last month or so, and I was
Yeah,
thinking about you over
70, but yeah.
set up to
Yeah, we need about
70.
50 more. We're going to run out of space at some point. I mean, it's incredible. It really is.
Okay.
I mean, we already have, we have a, we're a pretty big company already, but that's a lot of people to add quickly. And you talk about training, you talk about the specialized knowledge that is needed, to, for example, just, inventory, packing boxes is not too difficult, but there's other things like quality control, people selling to you. All of that has to be carefully examined, tested, checked before it can be put into inventory. Of course, on the sales side, the admin, there's a lot of complexity. So onboarding a lot of people quickly is difficult, and we're doing the best we can. I think we're doing pretty well with it, but yeah, it's sorry, I that was just jumping in there. Yeah, it's 70 and continuing.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that. I was thinking about you over the weekend because I was talking to someone about this where it's very specific and not easy business model to run where we sit there for years and not much is happening with the price, and then you have surges like this. And
Yeah.
although fortunately, if anyone is up to the task, I know it is you. And Stefan, you also mentioned, the low percentage of people that own metals and that now we're starting to see people come in. I think something people in gold and silver have often looked to is do we get the mainstream start to pile in at some point, which maybe based on what you're saying, we could say we're closer to than ever. I've wondered, well, if you have it go up to 120 and then it goes back to 80, does that kill the momentum? Although it
Yeah.
seems like the opposite has happened, where now people are thinking, hey, if I thought I'd missed my chance, so what would you say about the mainstream and where we're at now?
Well, that's yeah, I still think it's a very much a contrarian investment. I think the volatility does scare some people. Of course, most people are not actively involved in their money management to begin with, or they don't necessarily give much thought to this. They're dealing with more, day-to-day issues and but I think that you have the combination of high inflation and things that are going kind of wrong economically for a lot of folks and for our country and our economy. It's attracting attention to hard assets. The dollar's been weak. You're seeing now, of course, these price moves in all the metals, gold and silver, but platinum, palladium, uranium, they're all, copper. So I think that's getting a lot of attention, and people are starting to think, "Hey, wait a minute." I mean, honestly, it was just like a month ago that one of the folks in my—I guess he's involved as a financial advisor in an area of my personal financial life. For 20 years, he's been not recommending gold. It's too volatile, and this is a risk-averse guy. He's always been kind of the risk guy. And I was saying to him like 2 months ago, I'm like, I'm really surprised somebody who's so concerned about risk that you have not been buying gold, advising your clients to buy gold. I mean, this is a risk, this is a an asset that you want to hold in a risky environment. It's financial insurance. Why are you not recommending this? He's like, I know there's a big bias. I'm trying to get out of it. We're starting to put a few people in. We do have four clients. It's like four clients. Like, this is a major firm. Like, you got to be kidding me. 20 years into this incredible bull market where gold has outperformed the S&P and silver, only recently started, really showing its what it can do. But to not have put people in these assets for 20 years, I mean, that's financial malpractice. And I think that's still going on. And now that these folks see this and they go, oh, it's all, we've already missed it, or it's going to correct. And then it does correct, and the volatility starts kind of reinforcing this idea. Oh yeah, like we said, that was the risky asset. That's why we didn't put you in that. I mean, yes, you did have Morgan Stanley recently come out and change their 60-40 to the 60-20-20. And that was, cutting edge for Wall Street, but 15 years basically behind the curve for, the people that are on your, listening to your shows and podcasts. So I think we're still very, very early. I mean, obviously we have seen a huge influx in just the last few weeks, but I mean, ask around how many of your friends, the people that are on this, how many of your friends and family own any gold or silver? I heard from distant, not distant, like one step removed relatives. Hey, we need to talk about this. Like, I've been, you guys have known I've been in this business, in this field for 15 years. Why now? Like, I mean, I'm glad it's better late than never, but I think we're still way ahead of the curve, and we'll eventually, when everybody's talking about it, maybe that's the time to reduce our exposure, but I think we're still very much early in the process.
Well, I know what you mean, and I'm not picking on my brother here, although it was
Yeah, there
interesting.
you go.
I think it was somewhere in November after silver had hit 50, and obviously he's heard too much silver talk for me in a lifetime. But I was thinking, hey, I asked him, was he aware that silver had hit 50? And even a month or so later, he had not been, and not critical of him, but just saying that someone that is related to me was not aware. Although
Yeah.
Stefan, yesterday in the gym, I was wearing the heat's been out here in our building, so it's a little cold. I was wearing my hashtag got silver sweatshirt. I did have someone come up and ask me, and we started talking silver there, so we're getting there. And I would
Yeah.
imagine these things take a while. I think what you're describing with your broker is common, and you know how people like to wait until the price has gone up to buy. Also in there, Stefan, you mentioned that inflation is high, which I think myself and most of the people watching this would probably agree with, but it's intriguing. We're seeing $80, $100, $120 silver, $5,000 gold. Before, I would imagine, I don't think most people who are in the mainstream audience think inflation is a problem yet. And obviously we look at onshoring and a million other things. Seems a good bet it will go higher, but we're seeing this before there's been the next inflation wave, before the debt has been addressed or let alone resolved. So it's like, and then on top of it, we have the Fed futures curve. They're pricing in two rate cuts, 225 basis rate cuts over the next 2 years, while Trump just put in his guy, Kevin Warsh, who the media somehow calculated was hawkish yet. What if he is taking rates down to that 1% level that Trump has said that's where he thinks they should be? So there's, even with this price, is still some big elephants coming quickly down the road.
Yeah, there's a real disconnect. I think the inflation, of course, is higher than than it's reported, but to have the Fed loosening in an inflationary boom of really a hard asset boom, I mean that's part of the reason it's happening, honestly. It's not the only reason. Deglobalization is also impacting that. So there's just a lot of inflationary pressures building. It's remarkable for the Federal Reserve to be in a rate cutting cycle in this environment, but that's the system. I mean, the system, the monetary system is to counteract. Basically, they're deathly afraid of inflation. They want to prop up asset prices, and they're successful at doing that. And they have the unlimited ability to do that. And the most important thing for them is to make sure the debt burden is manageable. And it's, obviously inflation is a benefit to the debtors. The biggest debtor of them all is the U.S. government. And so that's what you're going to get. It's basically negative real interest rates. And that's called financial repression. And it basically harms savers. It harms people who hold fixed obligation or fixed income. And it basically benefits debtors, and it benefits people that can hedge or know how to manage their personal affairs to basically harness that to their advantage. And central banks are doing that. They're de-dollarizing. People that own a home, they benefit. It's not as liquid as gold, but it's another tangible asset that benefits from zeros being added to the currency. And so that's really the lifeboat, is you have to get out of fixed income and try to focus on getting some exposure to hard assets. And one of the greatest ones is gold and silver. And we're seeing now the world kind of awaken to that. I think it's mostly outside of the country as far as people that get it. Asia, a lot of this is being driven by physical demand in Asia, not just India, but of course China. And then central banks on the gold side who have been buying gold hand over fist for the last 3 years. So I think it's slowly kind of winding around, and the American people who've been misled by their financial advisors and Wall Street, which is so enamored with financial leverage and paper investments, I think things are kind of coming home to roost. And I think, again, I think we're still real early in this.
Yeah, and I think my favorite part, I'm writing notes down. You're bringing up so many great topics, although I love what you said, the government, their main priority is managing the debt, which not doing incredibly well with, although Stefan, back to the retail level. I was hoping you could put this into perspective for people. It's not something they can easily look up somewhere, but I've been reading, talking with bullion dealers that over the past, I would say 3 years, maybe you could be more precise, but a lot of selling at what has been described to me as historic levels. I know you said there's been a lot of two-way activity over the past couple of months, but could you maybe like go back a little bit in time when you started noticing increased selling and bring us to now?
So of course, COVID from 2020 to 2022 and early 2023, that was a very busy time in our market. A lot of new people coming in. You had the inflation, you had the government, you had martial law, you had all World War III, the Russia invasion, all the all the worries of that kind of stuff. So then they had the bank thing, the bank run, the regional bank crisis in early 2023. That was sort of the end of the really frenetic period in our retail market prior to the more recent, basically 6 months or 3 months. So basically, late 2023 to mid 2025. It was slow on the buy side and it was picking up on the sell side, meaning people were seeing, and it started with gold because gold was really moving. Remember, it kind of pivoted around the time of the Ukraine war in 2022 and then started on an uptrend and then it started accelerating 2024, 2025. So as gold was rising, we started seeing a lot more people selling gold that had long held it for a long time. And of course, it went, more than doubled in the last 2 years. So we saw a lot of gold selling back to retail, not as much silver until last year, 2025. And of course, once it took off from the 30s and started heading to 50 and to 100, it really picked up big time the last few months. So we started buying a lot more silver from our customers. We're an online retailer, so we don't bear the brunt of the selling in the same way the local coin shops do. People tend to like to walk in, and even if they get paid less locally, they can walk out with their money right away. Otherwise, they have to ship it to someone like us, maybe get a little bit more, or they have it in a depository, sell it from the depository. But a lot of the local dealers had this massive sort of imbalance between what they were buying and what they were selling. And so that caused all these local guys had to flip to wholesalers. Some of it got sent off to refineries. Basically, that caused the whole premium structure to start falling and falling. And that's been a condition really for the last 2 years. Started, like I said, with gold, and then it kind of moved to both silver and gold. So, it was now just in the last 2 or 3 months that we really saw the retail buying pick up. So now you have, and you still have the selling. So now you have a very active market on both sides. But it's really, we've seen a lot of dislocations in our market with backlogs at refineries in particular. And so, like junk silver, for example, still just flooded the market. We're selling it for several dollars under spot at moneymetals.com right now. You can't get it refined at all. So it's not a great time to be selling junk silver if you're a long-term holder, because you're going to get a quite a discount to spot in the current market. It's not three nines pure, and so it can't be transformed into other products that might be more able to be sold. So that's led to a big glut in the 90% silver right now, and the premium structure has really fallen. Even as retail demand has picked up, junk silver, at least at Money Metals, is still well below spot. So it's things, interesting things are happening. The refining situation has definitely impacted the local guys in particular, the scrap comminglers. They're having lots of trouble. Some refineries are just outright refusing to accept scrap, 90% silver, even 3/9 silver. Some of them aren't accepting that. And even if they do accept it, it will be months before you get paid. And that's really shut down the funding mechanism around a lot of these local dealers in particular. So it's really had a knock-on effect on bids and also just the liquidity of the small guys. So really, on the minted product, there's an outlet, and that's new buyers. And of course, those have now just suddenly come rushing in the last few weeks. So I think, you'll start seeing bid premiums start coming up. You're already seeing premiums on the buy side rise as well because of the higher demand, especially things like Silver Eagles, which is not really the thing people should be buying, but people do. So it's a very interesting market right now. And one of the other problems is there just isn't silver refining capacity in the US. So like 60% of it's in China, And there's a premium in China for silver. So some of the silver that's going into China is not going to come back out because why would it? If there's a premium domestically over the spot price. And so, we do have some issues in our precious metal supply chain here in the US, particularly with lack of refining capacity. So that's something that maybe we'll see progress on as the deglobalization unfolds and people see the consequences of not having the capacity here, especially from a national security standpoint.
Yeah, you touched on a bunch of the items on my list here because I'd really like to get this in perspective for folks with what's happening, the refiners, especially where it's like you see secondary product has become its own market from the newly minted. Although just to set that up, I had a bullion dealer on last week and he mentioned one of the changes and now I think he said the refiners aren't sending the payment or there's a delay in the payment, but something where the cash flows now have stopped, which doesn't mean much to most people in gold and silver, but if you're on a retail level, it means a lot. And perhaps you could touch on that.
So the way a refinery works typically is so you have all these smaller comminglers of scrap, and then you have local coin shops, and there's certain things that they buy, particularly, sterling silver or junk silver coins, things that are not pure silver, that need to be melted and refined in order to basically get the money out. And so they have relationships with refiners. And what the way it normally works is they send it off. And as soon as it arrives, the refinery will check it and maybe do some initial testing. And then they'll let them take an advance off of that metal before it's been refined. And then those parties, those businesses take those funds and continue their business model, which is to buy scrap or buy junk silver coins or whatever. But when they're no longer able to get advances, which has now been rolled out by several large refineries, they essentially are being told, look, we may be willing to refine your stuff. And it, by the way, it's taking weeks or months longer than usual, particularly on silver. We may accept it, but you're going to have to finance it where we cannot pay you until the end, because we've just exceeded our available capacity to do that. And not only that, but it's not just about credit lines, but it's also about the lease market, because a lot of refineries, in order to finance their metal in production and to be able to pay people those advances, they have been borrowing metal from the bullion banks. And all the dislocations that have been happening in the market with the spread between London and New York and China. And all of this has caused lease rates to rise, which means that now to borrow metal, if you're a refinery and that's how you finance your feedstock, well, now you're paying a much higher rate for that privilege, much higher than, say, an interest rate on a line of credit. And so there have been times where, and this happened big time in October, where the lease rate went to like 10, 20, 30 cents an ounce per day on silver, per day. Per day. So if you're borrowing metal and you're using a bullion bank lease, you were paying $3 or $1 an ounce over a weekend just to finance that metal. And so when you're a refinery and you're working on 1, 2, 3%, 4% margins to refine, to pay for all your machinery, to pay for the whole process, and you're having a financing cost of 1% or 0.5% a day. I mean, the whole thing just shuts down. So, I mean, that's not the situation at this very moment with lease rates. But the point is that there's so much metal in the mechanism, there's so much backlog that the refineries simply cannot be people's banks. So, if you want to get something refined, yeah, they might do it for you, but you're going to have to hold ownership of that metal through the process. And then at the end, when it's turned into something that actually can be sold on the global market, 4-9 silver, 3-9 silver, or 1,000-ounce bars, or whatever, which is really the ultimate liquidity in the market, is on those large 1,000-ounce bars, which because that is the spot price, and that's the item that's transacted at that spot price. You can actually get it by taking those bars and putting them into the exchanges. So if you're a little guy, you got to finance that for 3, 2, 3, 4 months through the refining process, and most of them can't do that. And as a result, they can no longer go out and buy more scrap, or if they do, they have to pay even lower. And so you can see how this has a knock-on effect. But I'm not worried about the refineries myself. I know people that are impacted by that go, oh my gosh, there's a problem at the refineries. I think it's a problem that has to do with the massive backlogs and the fact that there's all these little businesses that, that normally have been able to rely on their counterparties for the financing that they can't do themselves. So it's just a really interesting dynamic. And it's going to take some time to clear this out. And frankly, if the selling continues, especially if metals, silver and gold go back up again, as they already are, you might see another wave of this. So again, lack of capacity. And it's just a small door, and not everybody can go through that small door.
Yeah, and Stefan, for let's say for anyone watching who's saying, all right, that doesn't sound ideal, but what does that mean to me as someone who may want to buy and sell silver when that's happening? If it continues, how does that play out to a retail customer?
Well, I think, okay, so one thing is to think about, like, who is your counterparty, and are they well run and capitalize to be able to service you in this environment? So, I mean, I think Money Metals is performing extremely well in this environment. I think a lot of the local guys are having trouble, and not, mainly because they're bidding everything down. They're stuck with inventory they can't sell. They're having to flip it, so they have to pay less. So I don't think now is a good time to be selling silver. I think macro wise, I don't think you should sell silver, unless you already have so much of it that you don't know what to do with it. But most people are way underinvested, so I don't think that now is a great time to sell silver, given that the premiums or the bids are lower, the transaction costs are higher. So I mean, but the other thing is find a dealer counterparty that you know can handle things efficiently, can pay quick, has been around for a while. So I think that's one thing. There is a lot more risk in this market. Obviously, there's a lot more volatility. So, gold and silver physical is not a short-term hold. It's the ultimate safe way to hold precious metals, but it's not for trading. If you want to trade, go buy, SLV or futures, which, really most people shouldn't do because there's a lot of leverage there. But the point is, if you're going for a long-term hold, then focus on physical, focus on a bullion type item. Don't buy anything that has a story. Don't buy a silver eagle, especially now. Those are, at the wholesale level, they're going to about $10 over spot at the wholesale level suddenly.
Wow.
So yeah, so that means retail, it's going to be, 12, 15, and this happened before. Of course, percentage wise, it's not as much as it was when it was $30 an ounce and the wholesale premium was $10. And the retail premium was 15. Well, that was a 50% premium above spot. At least, one thing to keep in mind is that prices are a lot higher. And so these dollar amounts are, as a percentage, not a lot higher. In fact, they're often lower even now. So, but that said, the spreads are wider on both the bid and the ask. And so, I wouldn't be thinking about trading. There's a lot to think about. I think that there's a lot of risk. For people, there's a lot of risk for businesses in our industry. There's hedging issues, there's capital issues. There's also just the volatility causes people to freak out, and then sometimes people don't make good on their commitment to buy or sell. Like maybe they locked pricing, but then they don't ship it. Or they locked pricing to buy from a dealer, and then they don't send the check because these big swings are causing people to get, obviously, a little bit stressed. So I think take a step back. Don't get too much exposure to any one asset. Think long term, and be sure that you are comfortable with who you're working with.
Yeah, it's a great point, especially if you can think about these things before the big move occurs, so you're not making a decision all that day when you're maybe a bit emotional or rattled.
Right.
And again, you can change your plans, but I heard Rick Rule mention in an interview recently how it's before he does any investment, he writes, okay, what am I aiming at? What's the target? How do I
Yeah.
proceed? And I think that's a great idea. Although, Stefan, you set the stage. Now, here's my question. I've been waiting probably longer than a week to get your opinion on. With the silver that's being sold back, how come the dealers aren't reselling more of that out? I hear the newly minted stuff is starting to get less available and the premiums are higher. So I mean, if someone comes in and wants to buy the cheapest silver, why aren't they buying back the stuff that the refiners can't handle? And it seems like there's a backlog there. Why isn't more of that getting sent back out?
That's a good question. Well, I think the 90% silver coins, I think we're definitely that's definitely true there. A lot of people are selling that, not as many people are buying it. And you see that reflected in both the bids and the asks. As I mentioned, we're selling for $3 under spot right now, that stuff. And we'd like to, we probably will be dropping the price more because frankly, we have more of it coming in than we're selling out the front door. And I think the reason is because recently we see a lot of new investors coming in and they do not get the whole idea of 90% silver. They want something new. They want something shiny. They don't understand, 90%. What, well, does that mean it's not an ounce? Does that mean it's not pure? Well, yeah, it means it's not pure, but it's sold by the ounce and the copper you get for free. So it's very complicated. Then the whole thing about, oh, well, this is a quarter. How, why is it worth $30? It's just a quarter, whatever the calculation is. Well, maybe about $20. So, by the way, that's really remarkable if you think about it. Well, how much is a quarter that's silver worth in silver? I mean, that's almost 0.2 ounces. So that's what, $16, $17. So one quarter from 1965 is today worth $17. I mean, that's such a great example of the devaluation of our money unit that's occurred. But again, people don't get that product when they're a new customer for the most part. And so I think that that's impacted the market there. I don't know that the secondary market is not being sold. I mean, some of it is being reminted into new. Well, that's not entirely true. There are situations where like we will get a bunch of 10-ounce bars that come in and they're not saleable necessarily. I mean, most of the time when people sell us something back, it's in good shape, but you go through it very carefully and say, okay, these are secondary market. There's lots of dings on them or they're dirty or whatever. These are like new or actually new. And so they get put in a different category. So sometimes the older stuff gets remelted and sent off to the mints, which, up until very recently were desperate for business. So they would even take 1 ounce rounds, if it was convenient for you, because they were happy to just get the volume, because so much selling was happening a few months ago that there was almost no need for mints to do anything. So I guess my point is some of that stuff that you're talking about ends up getting remelted and minted into new stuff. And then the 90% silver, you can't do that because it's not pure silver. You can't turn it into a 10-ounce bullion bar. So, and you can't get it refined very easily. So all you can really do is sell it for less and less under spot or hold on to it long term if you're a dealer like us. So there's just lots of different twists and turns in this market right now. Everybody is dealing with volume and challenges in different ways. It's also very exciting because it does mean the market is expanding. That's part of why this is happening.
Yeah, it's wild what we are seeing there. And I really appreciate a lot of these things you're pointing out because I know people, and we'll get to maybe an indication of people are selling silver, what they can reasonably expect to get. But I mean, you're selling junk silver at $3 under, and you mentioned how the Eagles $10, $12 premium over. And again, I think it gets missed. Fortunately, in my option trading days, I had this hammered into my head. But every time you're crossing that spread, and if it's a $15 spread, you want to avoid that. So,
Right.
certainly, if you want to buy silver under spot, junk silver, the way to go. Stefan, similar to the last question, but we have this stuff that's sitting here and can't be refined. Well, China is paying $8 to $10 premiums. I have a junior silver producer in Peru that received calls from groups in China and India trying to buy his production at an $8 to $10 premium, which shows me that I think there is legitimate tightness in the East. Now, on one hand, you could say, well, do they go to the COMEX? It looks like that could actually be happening because we've seen after that big surge of metal into the COMEX last year, it started coming out and even accelerated in the last couple of weeks. At the same time, I don't imagine Trump and Bessent are going to say, like, yeah, take 100 million ounces if you need more. Yet, what is to stop? Or have we seen this already? Can someone in China who needs silver talk to the dealers, round up a bunch of these lots? Is it just too hard because of logistics? It's small amounts? Or do you think we could see something like that where they do have the refining capacity?
Well, I could tell you that we're having discussions with counterparties in other parts of the world about refining silver, including the 90% coins. So
Wow.
that's about, I'll say that. I would not be surprised if we're sending very large amounts of those out of the country to be refined. Obviously, when you're dealing with counterparties around the world, there's new risks introduced there, right? So, it's a little harder to go see them. It's a little harder to understand their operations. Sometimes we would like to do a site visit first. So there's more friction, and particularly in that part of the world. Not only is it a long ways away, but it's, maybe doesn't ascribe to all the same legal norms that we're used to in the West, in the US. So there are risks, but yes, that is happening, and that will happen increasingly. I mean, I feel like there's kind of a sucking sound coming out of China for silver and other minerals. Not only are they scouring the globe, going that maybe that's part of the reason for the Donroe Doctrine is to go push them out of South America, because this is in many ways a resource war developing, and China has been very strategic about going and directly locking up these resources and investing in these areas. But I think that with the premium in China that you see on things like silver, and the fact that 60% or something of the refining capacity is there for silver, you're going to see scrap, and I'm sure it's already happening, and I think it's going to increase. If this premium, certainly, it's going to draw in the metal, both for the refining services as well as the fact they get a premium when they sell it domestically. So yes, they're going to be drawing in metal. Here in the U.S. with the COMEX, I mean, there is definitely a big stockpile of metal on the COMEX. But yes, that can be cleaned out. There are scenarios. In the case of Money Metals, I'll just reveal that back in October, we were involved in sending several hundred thousand ounces to Dubai for end users in India who were just absolutely pounding the table. I mentioned the 30 cents per ounce financing cost for people that were short metal or who were leasing metal. Well, we had. So, we were hearing from people in Asia and India in particular, who were like desperately needing metal, desperately, and they were paying this overnight financing cost. They were screaming, the extra 2 or 3 days it took, the depositories were backlogged, but the extra couple days it took was costing them massive amounts, to just get it out and then to get it shipped. And they were flying it over there, which is unusual. You don't normally fly silver, but when the costs are so high of financing it, time is very valuable. So we sent about 15 pallets of 1,000 ounce bars to Dubai that were intended for India. And so it's absolutely doable. And that has been happening to an extent. The COMEX stocks are declining. They'd gone way up during that whole tariff thing early last year, where there was a premium in New York, and it pulled metal from London. So it was actually kind of overstocked there, or more highly stocked than it had been. That's now draining. It doesn't take much. I mean, what is it? The registered category has 100 million ounces. So I mean, and there's about 400 million in the exchange. When there's these big dislocations, the financial incentive to pull metal from anywhere, including the COMEX, are quite high. So I'm honestly surprised that it hasn't happened more than it already has, frankly, here in the US. I'm surprised that a lot of it hasn't left already. I'm sure some has, but it could happen very quickly.
Yeah, well, we've seen called that I'll call that 530 the peak, and we're down to 405 million ounces, so a good chunk already. I'm a little bit surprised. I don't know how closely the government manages these things, but if China's having tightness, and we see the U.S. building a strategic stockpile of critical minerals now, while China putting more qualifications on the export restrictions. So, and while I have this up here, here's the Chinese inventory. Stefan, without looking, would you care to venture how many ounces of silver are underpinning the two Chinese markets?
Oh wow, I'm sure it's less than the COMEX, but I don't know. Maybe we can
We got
figure.
34.9 million in
Wow.
China. The industrial center, which we've talked about the free float of London and how that caused a problem. I mean, this is like a sixth of what London has.
Yeah.
So
And there's
quite
also,
stunning.
the thing that's not on that chart, I think would be interesting to add would be to look at the trading activity and volume over that same time period, because the markets are expanding in that part of the world. So they're expanding in an environment where the actual physical metal is way less underpinning it. So that's pretty interesting. So 34 million ounces in Shanghai. Now that's gold, right? We're looking at gold.
No, that's silver.
Oh, that's silver. Okay. Oh, on the Shanghai Gold Exchange. Got it. Okay. So, wow. Yeah, that's the COMEX has 400 million. 100 million of that's in the registered category. Theoretically, all 400 million is available at a certain price, but the 100 million is really all that's kind of the free float that's backing sort of immediate deliveries. So, what is 100 million in silver worth? Is that 8 billion? So, it only takes 8 billion to clean out the physical stocks of the COMEX.
Well, here's another way you could look at it. Here's the registered at 104 million. We just lost more than 104 million since October
Yeah.
when India went into a shortage. So certainly
Yeah.
we'll keep an eye on that. And Stefan, I don't know if you saw this. I only noticed this morning, but this is the ETFs. And as we can see, we had quite a surge on. Let me get the 1 month so we can see the exact. Yeah, that was yesterday. 30 million ounces. So similar to what you were describing on the retail level, it's interesting. We had seen withdrawals for the 2 weeks prior to the
Yeah.
crash. So maybe someone knew what was coming there yet. 29 million added yesterday. And I believe that was bigger than this one. It's either the third or fourth largest 1 day. See, so the 30 would be up here. You have that one, which I think was smaller a couple of weeks ago, and then of course the big one in the silver squeeze in 2021. So we're talking about the second or third largest 1 day addition when the price drops. So matching what you've been seeing on the retail level as
Yeah.
well.
I want to mention, actually, I'll break a little news here. So next week, I
Ooh,
expect, yeah, next week,
like
I
it.
expect there will be a federal bill introduced in the U.S. Senate called the Silver Act. And the Silver Act is a bill that deals with depositories involved with the COMEX. Right now, it's just a New York-centric, basically, situation. The bullion banks have their, sort of the idea that the New York markets is the center of the financial universe. That was true in the 70s when the system was mostly built. And all the depositories that are connected with the COMEX are located in that very small geographic area, which literally 150 miles from New York City, a radius. And so that means that the deliverable silver is only in those depositories, and any other part of the country is excluded. And so that brings into play systemic risk, geographical concentration, issues of cost efficiency, logistics, potential restraint of trade, and so forth. That practice of basically all the metals backing the global, or at least the US precious metals markets, the public markets, are based in a very small geographic area around New York. So this bill, the Silver Act, stands for System Integrity Through Licensed Vault Expansion and Resilience, Silver Act. And so basically what it would do is it will prompt the exchange to include other depositories in other parts of the country so that they can be storage locations and delivery locations for COMEX deliveries. And I should mention there are still large silver, especially silver stockpiles in other depositories that are not part of the COMEX, that are not on your chart. I know there's at least 100 million ounces in Texas. There's obviously a fair number of ounces in Idaho and Money Metals Depository. There's a couple depositories in Nevada. And other parts, there's even a small depository in Wyoming and South Dakota or North Dakota. So there are other depositories that are not on the exchange that do have silver, especially. But the idea basically is that we want to make our system more resilient by having more delivery options and locations, and also let people store metal outside of the New York area that still has the liquidity that comes with being able to be used on the market, if in a delivery. So there's a lot of interest by members of Congress outside of the New York area in allowing the rest of the country to participate in the financial infrastructure that is built around the precious metals market. So that's called the Silver Act, and it should be introduced next week. So you'll probably hear more about that.
Wow, well, thank you for breaking the scoop. Stefan, I think you just
Yes.
sent a couple thousand people Googling the Silver Act,
They won't
although
find it
you're
yet, but yeah.
well, that's a little advance notice
Yeah.
and why it's a great reason to hit the subscribe bell and the notification subscribe button and notification bell. I guess I got that
Yeah.
backwards so that when we have Stefan on, you get to catch these things. Stefan, I know you're selling a lot of gold and silver now, so I want to be respectful of your time. If I may, just two last quick ones. For people that are selling metal back right now, I've heard $15. There was some guy on Twitter telling everyone he couldn't sell less than 30% under spot. What is the market out there? What should people be roughly expecting to get so they, if they do need to
Yeah.
sell, they don't get themselves in trouble?
Yeah, well, the bids are not great, but they are coming up the last few days. We've already raised bids, we're going to raise them again. Silver Eagles, the bids are coming up probably to the $4 or $5 under spot range. Those will probably come up pretty fast here because of what's happening on the ask side. When you deal with bars and rounds, you're still looking at, nine, 10, 11, $12. But again, I think that, that was especially the case when silver was at $120 an ounce a week ago. And now we're seeing those bids come up, particularly as you start seeing the lopsided, much more people buying than selling. And so now all of a sudden, that pre the inventories are getting cleared out, and that allows the spreads to narrow, especially on the bid side. Those will come up. So, junk silver, though, I got to tell you, I mean, wholesalers are now bidding like $19, $18, $17 under spot. So, like, a local coin shop is probably going to be not able to get you even $20 under spot on junk silver. And but again, I think that's going to be a short-term scenario. So I just wouldn't really be selling right now, honestly, unless you need to. Let the spreads, narrow, and maybe silver will come back up. But it's not as liquid as it has been. But the other thing to keep in mind, though, is the percentages. So, when a $4 premium when silver was at $30, that's 13%, right? When a $6 premium, $8 premium, when silver's at 85, that's a lot. That's a lower percentage. So, what is that? 7%, 8%. So that's the other thing to keep in mind. And that's really the most important thing.
Yeah, well, well said. And as you touched on before, if someone wants to be trading, sometimes SLV better for that. I think especially with physical metals. I mean, I did not sell any physical silver in the last month or so. I basically have my physical silver that the purpose was what I see happening with debt, money printing. I don't see that stopping. So again, having your right product for your right bucket goes a long way. And then the last one, which you've touched on a bit before, but are we going to see newly minted products become unavailable? And you also touched on the premiums, but I believe they have started to rise. Are
Yeah.
people going to not be able to buy their 2026 Cougarans or Eagles soon? Or what would you say there?
I don't think. I mean, of course, a lot of that depends on whether retail demand accelerates from here. It's obviously been very brisk in the last 3 or 4 or 5 days since that big correction. I've noticed a lot of our competitors have a 1 month delay on pre-sale with a lot of the newly minted stuff. We don't have delays on the only delays we have are shipping backlog. So right now I think we're quoting 6 to 7 days or 6 to 8 days to ship out a new order. And we've hired so many people that that's coming down. But actually the thing that's really killing us is the POs, the purchase orders, people shipping in. We get 1,000 boxes of metal per day, or 500 boxes. Big, gold and silver has to be unpacked, has to be done under cameras, has to be carefully quality controlled. That's just a crushing amount of volume. It's not something you can rush. We make sure everything is tested, with devices and so forth before it's put in our vault, because now that's going to go back out as to fulfill a new order. So the quality control and the amount of physical work involved in that. And that's led to backlogs. And I've seen all of our competitors are putting in all these limits, like you have to, we don't want a small customer at all. We're not doing that. We're just hiring and addressing it. We're rolling back on marketing to try to get things caught up, and rather than penalizing our customers by saying you have to have $20,000 if you're going to sell to us, or we won't take your order unless it's at least $500, or we won't give you free shipping unless it's $500 when we used to do it for $200. We're not doing any of that. We don't have any kind of inventory issues across our. There was a little bit of an issue in copper, I should say. That kind of got cleaned out. And now we're replenished, but we don't have the inventory issues that I'm seeing across the market, which is interesting. It's just the way, I guess, we're running our business and the way we've capitalized our business. Copper is interesting, Chris. People are excited about copper. Stay away from anything other than the pennies. The pennies are actually a decent deal. I mean, we're selling for like 30% over the melt value of copper, or 20. It's like $8 a pound or something like that, and copper is $6 a pound. That's the only way to buy copper in the bullion market. All the other stuff, those copper rounds and bars, and it's not. There's just a lot of fabrication costs involved versus the actual value of the metal, and so that means you end up paying like five times the spot price of copper to buy a copper round. So don't do that. Like, if you're going to buy copper, buy pennies, or like the pre-1983 pennies that are 95% copper, or just buy maybe a copper ETF or something like that. It's the spreads are too big, the premiums are too high. But it's a beautiful metal. I mean, in all fairness, there's some really neat products out there. But that's the one thing that has actually been difficult to keep in stock for us. We have had no issues with silver, but I know that they exist.
Interesting. Well, I actually got a call from someone yesterday who wanted to buy some copper, and I sent her your way. So hopefully, I'll
Okay,
have to let her
great.
know to
Thank
go
you.
with the pennies rather than
Yeah.
the bars. And anyway, in wrapping up, Stefan, this was really a master class, and I appreciate that and sharing a lot
Thanks.
of information. I think maybe someone there, where in there, the quest is, can you see the price come down by 30% and still have a smile on your face that day? And maybe some of us get there or not,
Yeah.
but can be nerve-rattling
Well,
times.
aren't we
So
up like 15% for the month, even after all that?
that's how I
A
look
little
at it. If you'd slept
perspective.
in after Christmas, you'd be ahead. I get it. It did go there and it came down.
Yeah.
And we've seen 1980 and 2011, so I think it's good to learn from those. I do think there are differences in today's
Yeah.
situation. But Stefan, in wrapping up, can you just let folks know where they can find you, as I'm
Sure.
trying to get my screen share up here?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. So Money Metals Exchange, we're one of the top three largest online dealers and depositories in the US. Been around since tw 2010, so 16 years. We are located in Idaho. We help customers all over the country and internationally, but we're mostly focused on US. Our depository is the largest depository outside of the New York Fed, at least in terms of being a Class 3 vault. It's twice the size of Fort Knox. 8,500 square feet, four massive vaults. We store, we buy, we sell. We even lend if you want to get a line of credit against your own gold or silver in our depository. If you have a business purpose, we're a lender. Interest rates are well under 10%. It's a revolving line of credit. It's not like a pawn shop type situation. It's very flexible. It's an accommodation. Not many people want to do that. That's certainly fine. But you can't go to a bank and get a line of credit against your gold and silver. They don't know how to value it. They don't know how to store it. They don't know how to liquidate it. They hate it. That's the other thing. It's kryptonite for the bankers. So there's no way you can get this from a bank. But at Money Metals, you can get a line of credit against your own holdings in your segregated storage account if you want. It has to be for a business purpose, but so that eliminates a lot of potential borrowers. But anyway, we're happy to help
Can't take it
moneymetals.com.
and lever up on AGQ options on margin.
Yeah, and we don't allow people to use to immediately buy gold and silver. That's not the purpose of the loan. I mean, obviously money is fungible, but it has to be a business purpose. A lot of real estate investors, small business people, family wealth offices, different types, but not for consume, not to put a new roof on your house But you know, ultimately, that is an attractive option right now in the context of people who are sitting on a lot of capital gains. Because if you were to sell your gold and silver for liquidity, which you can do, and obviously they're liquid assets, but you incur a taxable event and potentially have to pay capital gains tax at this crazy 28% discriminatorily high capital gains tax rate. And so borrowing against your gold and silver to get liquidity is an attractive option for those people in that situation. And that, again, if they have a business purpose, and it has to be their metal, obviously, not it has nothing to do with anyone else's metal, your metal in a segregated container at Money Metals Depository in Idaho, and we can give you a line of credit secured by
Okay, so someone can pledge Eric Sprott's silver and say, "Hey, I
that.
need a little cash here." Although Stefan, I appreciate that. I actually did have someone ask me a couple weeks ago about a loan, and I'll mention that you guys
Great.
do that, and really appreciate what you do. There's a look at the vault, and yeah, I really admire the way you go about things. I know there's
Thank
different
you.
ranges of dealers who do different things, although I do appreciate that you're not, pumping like this, the silver axe gonna drive silver to 8 million next week, type thing. So, moneymetals.com, I am happy to recommend, and you're in good hands with Stefan. So, Stefan,
Thanks, Chris.
quite a time we're in. Thanks again for making some time. We will have to catch up again and do this soon. I also got to get JP back on to go through the latest state rankings. Can't even imagine what's happened.
There's a lot happening at the state level right now in sound money policy, so that I'm sure he'd love to do that.
Well, we will set that up. And thanks again for some
Thank
time.
you.
Hope everybody out there is doing well, enjoying Silver's backup today. So it's all going to be okay one way or another, and Stefan will check back in with you soon.
Thanks, Chris.